You had a tremendous circumstance because not just one or two or six or seven people seeing the Virgin Mary, but hundreds of thousands, including former President Abdel Nasser, government officials, officials of the church, the Orthodox Church, as well as Catholics, Protestants, Pentecostalists. You had them gathering every night for several years.
She stood there for a while, and then she began to walk on the roof till she reached the cross, and she knelt in front of the cross. She looked towards the area where I was, and she smiled. That view was the most majestic and beautiful and heavenly view I have ever laid my eyes on.
Why she show herself for me? Why Saint Mary show herself for someone like me?
A sheet of light just out of nowhere appeared on the top of the church. And my sister-in-law says, look, she's standing there. She came down, she stood on the ground beside the church. And then she moved into the church, and then she vanished.
That's a little bit of the soundtrack of the English documentary, The Appearance of the Virgin Mary in Egypt. We talked about that incident with Kevin Cook, our guest, in the first half hour. It actually occurred over a couple of years or so, from 1968 to 1970. Kevin, welcome back to the show for the second half hour. Let's talk a little bit about your book, Marian Apparitions Are Real. Kevin, is the book just about the apparitions, or do you cover other subjects?
Well, I try to weave in basically the cultural background of the time, of the circumstances, the pivotal timing of why she's there and how she's there. And I also stress the physical evidence of it. Those are the...
When you wrote this book, were you going to convince us that these things happen? Or were you a debunker?
No,
Or were you more like I am, agnostic?
I was open-minded because I knew that... Well, what I did know was that I'd obviously gotten involved with something with some validity to it. And... I'd always had the interest in it. I just took it open-mindedly, like we do on one of the shows. See, what had happened, Jerry, I guess I didn't tell you this originally, but I am a avid listener to, say, your show, Coast to Coast shows.
Mm-hmm.
And, I've always been interested in, I guess I grew up in the Bermuda Triangle, and my father was a big electronics engineer, but he did a lot of work with the Coast Guard on a volunteer basis, where he would hire Coast Guard power squadron instructors and what have you. And when I was a teenager, late 60s, early 70s, I asked him, you know, is there anything to this Bermuda Triangle? Because I'd read the Charles Berlitz. And he said, actually, you expect me to debunk it, because I'm a big, you know, engineer type, and your dad... But he said, actually, it's as true as all get out. Because, see, he hired admirals to, because he had a big, giant electronics company. They sold stuff to the Defense Department. So he hired as liaison, you know how they do, they'll hire retired admirals to help you, you know, make contacts and so forth. But he also, and of course the volunteer work, so between all those things, he had a lot of avenues to high-level military people. And the basic gist of what they told him was 10% of the events, there was no way it had normal explanation. no way, no how. You know, I used to smoke, and even if you don't, just logic tells you it takes about 10 minutes for a cigarette to burn down in an ashtray. And a Coast Guard boat would come up to, you know, a boat that, where the occupants, say, are missing, yet cigarettes burning in the ashtray, so you know they couldn't have been gone too long. No evidence of a struggle. The boat's got sonar and radar. It could tell what's on the water, over it in planes, under the water. There's nowhere for these people to have gotten away that the Coast Guard wouldn't know where they were. And this happened over and over and over. And also, I got one that's even tops that. Dad, you remember, the Ghost of Flight 401?
Yeah, sure. I remember the TV movie of Ernest Borgnine, even. The captain would show up, the dead captain would show up in the back of the cabin of the airplane?
Yeah, the navigator, right. Ernest Borgnine was in that movie. Well, what it was we lived just down the road in Plantation, Florida, from a lot of Eastern Airlines pilots. And I asked Dad about that. He says, well, here again, you expect me to debunk it? I can't, because he'd actually seen the movie himself without me knowing it, and had talked to these people at little barbecues, little neighbor get-togethers. Because Dad was a million-miler at Eastern Airlines, so he, that's all we ever did, fly up and down the East Coast on Eastern. And it was true, Jerry. I mean, you're talking retired Air Force veterans that became pilots for Eastern. I mean, guys that seen combat.
So, Kevin, what do you make of all this? I mean, besides the apparitions, the ghosts, and all the other paranormal activities, I mean, you're a confirmed Catholic now.
Okay, even Jesus spoke of ghosts in the Bible, for example. He did. And, you know, of course, the Witch of Endor raised the ghost of Solomon and all this. So, I mean, there are ghosts. Now, they're, what they are, I don't have the answer for. Jesus went to minister to the, according to the Bible, he went to minister to basically recalcitrant demons in Tartarus, which is another dimension, you know, after his death on the cross, and he came back, and it says he went to some other form of dimension. What I'm trying to say, we got a more complex world than we think we do. The Bible also says, he says, I go to prepare a place for you. In my Father's house are many mansions, and I go to prepare a place for you. When many mansions to me implies complexity. Okay? And also further, Jerry, in Genesis chapter 6, it speaks of the watchers who had sex with earth women.
Yeah, in that chapter in the Bible, especially Genesis 6:6, but the entire chapter, seems to me like they're talking about extraterrestrial beings coming to earth.
Well, I mean, this to me, I believe these people are an alien species. I don't think it was spirit.
Well, I'm with you.
And, but see, also, just logic. Take religion out of it for just a second. Yes, I'm a Catholic. I mean, I'm in there every Sunday, and I'm as Catholic as anybody. But what I'm saying is, forgetting religious affiliation for a moment, you've got all these stars, like Carl Sagan used to say, billions and billions of stars. There has to be more out there than just us. I mean, that's a big waste age.
Yeah, it's logical.
So, and also, who are we to contain God that you can only do this or that or the other? I mean, in the book, I also mentioned in my introduction that, I stress string theory and how, you know, the basic thrust of it is these days that I'm sure you've probably had shows that deal with this where, you know, there's either 11 or 25 different dimensions. There's no telling how many, at least that many, that they've pretty well proven. So there's just a lot more out there than we realize. So, I mean, I'm not going to be able to put God in a box.
Kevin, I know you're a devout Catholic, but the Vatican and the Catholic Church has been making overtures about ETs perhaps existing and UFOs.
They have. There's a UFO investigator I've heard before. Her name is Paula Harris.
Yeah, I know Paula very well. We've done a lot of things together.
She seemed like a nice gal. And she used to interview Monsignor Corrado Balducci, who seemed to be kind of
He and I were in the same movie, not at the same time, Fast Walkers.
See, that's the way the Vatican does, in kind of a diplomatic way. Of course, you know, they've been doing diplomacy for 2 million years. They know how to handle things. And basically...
I don't have the information in front of me, so I can't give the name, but I believe it was a bishop or at least somebody in the Catholic Church that said something to the effect, Kevin, well, I mean, if there's ETs, we need to save their souls or something to that
effect.
You want
to baptize them? I know. I forget who exactly said that. Yeah. And the Vatican Observatory is very, very interested in...
Yeah, in Arizona.
Yes, they twisted a lot of arms to get that observatory built in Tucson, and which was kind of strange because you got to understand they've got a nice observatory in Rome too. I mean, they didn't absolutely need it in Tucson, so it must have great meaning to them. And obviously, they
no
basically,
doubt in my mind that something paranormal or UFO wise or both is going on between Phoenix and Tucson. I mean, a lot of activity. And I don't really know what
it
is.
They do what they do with good reason, and I think really, even though Balducci, Monsignor Balducci, who I think is since deceased, his job was kind of a de facto representative of the Vatican at these groups and meetings, conferences, and he wasn't formally given that title, but yes, he was. And that's why I was relating to the approval of the apparitions. Frankly, came that way a lot too, because Pope John Paul II doesn't say absolutely the apparitional event at Knock was formally approved, but he'll go ahead and visit it, which is to say the same.
Well, I don't think in your book you're pushing the ET factor, and when you write about these apparitions, it seems to me it's another message, and that's a message of hope.
It is a message of hope. Sometimes a message of a warning, too, like a mother would do, like you better, straighten up or such and such events are going to happen. And this, it's occurred quite frequently. But the bulk of it is, yes, a message of hope.
Uh-huh.
The whole gist of the book and the whole gist of, I think, the whole event system is... God does care. He's not the watchmaker God that winds up the watch and then just leaves it running. He's not. And
so
I think,
you believe in divine intervention then?
Absolutely. If I told you a funny story that happened in the writing of this book, you'd probably think I'm nuts.
Well, by all means, Kevin, tell it to me.
I will. See, what had happened is, this is back January of this year. I was... in writing a book, it's a laborious, torturous
process.
This
is a love-hate thing, I take it.
It's like mining coal. And anyhow...
Go ahead with the story.
I had, got a little bit of slow progress. I was about, 80% done. And I got a little nudge mentally, like, Kevin, you need to get this done. Quit procrastinating and get this over with. You put too much work not to finish it. So I did, and around the first of the year in the tree business, it's... usually we take a couple of weeks off the first week of January to first part of January because it's too wet or cold. And I was in Barnes & Noble and I was finished writing a chapter on Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is, by the way, I need to mention something about that. But anyhow, I wrote the chapter and I got up to stretch my legs and, they had a sale table and I picked up Mad Magazine bathroom reader, a little silly cartoon book and what I used to read when I was a kid. I didn't go through it page by page. I just flipped it right open. But I flipped it right open to a joke about Our Lady of Lourdes.
Really?
Yeah. This is a 500-page book. And I'm thinking, good Lord, what are the chances?
Well, it's one out of 500.
But not just that, but what are the chances I'd even
right,
look
you're
at?
Right.
That was kind of a waker-upper. And then... I went to leave the store and go to the car, I turned on the radio, and there's a show on Catholic radio about Our Lady of Guadalupe, which is the chapter I just wrote. Now, the chances combined in that are much, much higher than winning the Texas lottery.
Now, this Lady of Guadalupe, that's down in Mexico, right?
Yes, Our Lady of Guadalupe. And I really want to stress this because this deals with physical evidence that's quite striking. This occurred in 1531. An Indian named Juan Diego had a meeting with the Virgin Mary, and right outside the setting for Mexico City, she asked him to go to the local bishop and for a chapel to be built in her honor there. And basically, the Indian tried to accommodate her wishes, and they patted him on the head and sent him along because they figured, yeah, I know you saw the Virgin Mary, right?
Yeah.
So he came back saying he needed some proof. And the essence, to make a long story short, he was wearing a garment which is called a tilma, T-I-L-M-A. It was a garment made out of cactus husks, very fragile, coarse husks. Okay. Well, she gives him flowers. This was December, and Mexico City's high elevation, fairly cold in December. She gives him a bunch of roses, Castilian roses, puts it in his tilma and says, take this back to the bishop. So he does this, and he opens it in front of the bishop, and the bishop is awestruck because these are Castilian roses. Of course, he's from native Castile, of Castile in Spain, and this, you know, he knew what they were. And secondly, and more importantly, there was the image of Our Lady of Guadalupe on this cactus husk garment when Diego opened it up. And this is on display right here and now, Jerry.
Uh-huh.
In the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City right now. It's been in church custody for just a little shy of 5 years.
Now, there have been many examples of images on cloth,
yeah,
like the Shroud of Turin. How do you explain that? Is it a miracle?
Sure. This one is, because let me finish just in real brief about this. This has been examined by Sandia Labs. No element of pigment from engineers from Sandia Labs, not as Sandia as a group, but engineers from Sandia Labs. There's no evidence of pigment. There's no evidence of tracing. And this is basically a miraculous thing. This thing should have deteriorated 450 years ago. If you and I took a bunch of cactus husks and threw it in the closet, in 50 years the thing would be dust. And this thing was exposed to heat issues, moisture issues, smoke issues, all kinds of things, for at least the first 350 years. All I'm saying is, and not only that, but here's the coup de grace. In her eyes, her eyes on this garment, in the Virgin Mary's eyes, it demonstrates the Samson-Purkinje effect, which it's a distortion effect, but if you and I were looking at each other, the opposite reflection would be distorted owing to the curvature of our lens in our eye. This is replicated in the eyes on the drawing or the image, and there's no way in 1531 they could do that. I don't think they could do it now. In other words, 20 different ophthalmologists have examined it, and all of them confirm this is the same image you would have if it was a human eye. In other words, detail is too fine to be replicated. Anyway, I don't mean to stress that too much, but I mean, this is a tremendously miraculous artifact.
And it's still on display down there.
Exactly. It gets millions of visitors every year. And it's under glass now, but like I say, for the first 350 years, it was just hanging in the breeze. And it has not deteriorated. But the key factor is there's no pigment, no tracing. We couldn't, in modern science, with all things we could do, we could not replicate it now.
We're talking with Kevin Cook, and the name of the book is Marian Apparitions Are Real. Kevin, I bet you feel like you're predestined to write this book.
Without a doubt. That doesn't make me a wonderful person, but I mean, I'm just an old salesman, an ex-army type. I'm not a real sweet guy. Even though I was a minister, I was basically, to be candid with you, Jerry, I was a little hard-bitten to be a Methodist minister in my youth. I was I'm just an old sales guy. But not a bad person, but just, you know, not necessarily a mild-mannered person. But she told the children of Fatima that she'll use sometimes not the best people, and I think I fit that category. And but I know this. You know, perhaps there's nothing more fervent than a convert, and I guess I fit that category.
Kevin, don't be too hard on yourself. I think you're pretty decent. I think you're a real, real fine fellow. Trust me.
I'm not the picture of a priest that would, you know, be a mild-mannered kind of fellow. I'm just an old buzzardy Florida salesman.
Yeah.
But still, I think I got smacked in the face like it was a tuna with this. I mean, you'd have to... And like I say, the thing I'm really trying to emphasize the most of it all, yes, the apparitions are true. They're absolutely true. They're from God. They're not from... Like, you know, I had one moderator of a show was trying to hit me over the head where these were the products of UFO aliens that were trying to replicate these images, and I'm thinking... Well, you know, I kept saying, no, I don't buy that. I mean, first you have to ask. Yes,
you know, who cares, Kevin, how God did it? If he did it, he did it. You know what I mean? I mean, I've been doing UFO shows forever, as you know.
I've met each other at UFO conferences.
Right. We did meet at a UFO conference. I mean, I think you can be a Christian and believe in UFOs.
But I like that. But the thing is, yes, God can use the aliens in his own purposes. He made the aliens too. But the thing is, here's the thing about it. The whole notion of the mentioning of it on the show I'm referring to was to try to basically denigrate the event as being of lesser importance and not divine origin. That's basically what the gist of it was. But I got to thinking, and I don't know, maybe I got crosswise with the moderator of the show, but I said, look, it's not alien-based. What's in it for the aliens to convert people to Catholicism or bring them to God? I mean, how is that going to help the alien agenda, you know? I mean, we've got prophecies, we've got miraculous healings, which I haven't even touched on, and physical evidence, and all to do what? To drive people towards Catholicism? I mean, that just doesn't seem like an alien would come that far to come do that, you know?
Well, Kevin, you seem pretty open to all possibilities, and I think it shows in this book.
Well, the one thing I could say is there's a fellow who's on some other talk shows. You might have had him, Lionel Fanthorpe.
No, I haven't.
Well, he's an Anglican priest, prolific author. He's written at least 100 books. No, actually, more like probably 200 books. He's a retired Anglican priest, and he was head of the British UFO organization as well. And he'd be like a good guest. You ought to round him up. But he's written books on sea mysteries and this and that. He just has an inquiring mind. And I know there's areas I won't go into. I mean, I'm not going to have seances, and I'm not going to deal in occultism from the standpoint of witchcraft or something of that nature. I wouldn't even think about it. But what I will say is that I do think, I think God gave you a mind to have an inquiring mind, and I think he's already clued us into the fact that there are aliens. Even the Vatican is giving a nodding assent to it in an oblique manner. So, I mean, I don't think God expects me to run from that issue.
Well, Kevin, some people do run from that issue.
No,
though.
I mean, you know, that's why I like, you know, I know there's something to the UFO phenomenon. There has to be. I mean, where there's, Jerry, I look at it in that context, where there's smoke, there's fire. I mean, well, you know, I know Linda Moulton Howe real well. I advertise sometimes with her, and I just run across her, and I've seen her a lot at Eureka Springs. And she and I talk sometimes, and she assures me, just from a reporter's view, for all the years she's looked into this stuff, there are aliens as sure as God made little green apples.
I know Linda, and I know you, and I agree with both of you.
Yeah, she's an excellent lady, and she's just telling me this on the side just as a friend. They just exist. And I fairly concur for the same reasons we just talked about. I mean, there's too many pilots, too many people that are credible policemen and everything else that have been good witnesses that you could, you know, you can bet their word has value.
Kevin, how about yourself personally? Have you had any supernatural experiences? If you have, give me an example.
Well, okay. I joined Catholicism about 5 years ago. And what happened is, the first year you have to go through a year of training to be confirmed and so forth. And I went to Mass for the first time, and while I was at that church, and you can't take it until the year's up, but I attended it. And being from the East Coast, Catholic churches all look gothic, you know, old, and the one I go to so modern, it looks like a movie theater lobby, and I didn't know where the holy water fountains were. I knew the Catholics would cross themselves with holy water on entering and so forth. So I sat down waiting for the service to start, and I saw the veteran Catholics come in. I saw what passed for the holy water fountains there, and I went on in. And I came out, and I was trying to beat the 2,000 people in the church out to the parking lot, because my church has 26,000 members. And I crossed myself with the holy water, and I didn't do it with any great anticipation. It was just a mechanistic thing that I knew Catholics did. And to make a long story short, what happened is I had a tremendous chill all through my torso. I knew this was unusual, too, and I said, okay. And it happened the first two times I went to the service like that. And I knew this was an unusual experience, too. And of all the dozens and dozens and dozens of times I've crossed myself with holy water since, it's never happened since. It was kind of like a slap-you-awake thing. And that, so I've had little small yet pleasant things like that in the odor of sanctity that are the most moving things I can.
Kevin, our time is about to get away from us. Before we leave, what would you like to say? I mean, besides go buy my book. You have a website. We haven't plugged that.
Is that Marian Apparitions Are Real. www.marianapparitionsarereal.com.
And we have a link to it.
Okay. And it's also at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. But, Jerry, all I'm trying to say, the essence and the crux of this whole matter is God does care. This is a real phenomenon. It's not superstition. It's not just something to promote. Matter of fact, the one thing I could say the Virgin Mary has said in many different apparitional attempts is she isn't even just coming just for Catholics. She's for everybody. I mean, this is a non-denominational effort on her part. You expect me to just say it's just for Catholics, but it's not. And she said it, so if she said it, I'll give it credence. And God does care. He doesn't. I mean, he may want you to follow a certain set of regulations, but he does care. And this is an effort to reach out to humanity via her that you feel comfortable with, more comfortable perhaps than somebody showing up with a chariot or something like that. And I guess a maternal figure being a more comforting and acceptable figure to you than an angel who might scare you to death, perhaps. And I guess I'm just saying the reality of it. It's really, this is the real stuff. That's what people need to know.
Kevin, interesting discussion, interesting subject. Thanks for being on, and we'll invite you back sometime.
Okay, that sounds good. You bet. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
I'm Jerry Pippin. Thank you for listening. Cheers.